Hey everybody, really quick here at the top. There's a part of this episode, and you're going to hear it if you make it that far, but I'm talking about how it's been a year since the pandemic began, and we're going through all that stuff, and somebody asks me in the comments about the COVID relief bill, and it sort of just kickstarts this, like, just toxic cycle where I'm sort of coming unglued. And, you know, I wanted to leave it in there because I do think it is important to show sort of the toll that this year has taken on everyone's mental health. I talk about in the episode how I hadn't meditated yet that day. That's an important part of my daily process. And, you know, I miss it from time to time. And when I do miss it, it almost always shows up somehow in my life that I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I didn't meditate today. And you're going to hear that on this show. And I want to leave that in there because I want to be real with you and honest with you about where I was sort of emotionally when recording this. But I don't know. I don't know why I feel the need to prep this at the beginning, but I do. I just feel like I want to say that I'm aware that that's not the way that I always want to be communicating when I do these conversations with you in the lives and stuff. And when I'm trying to discuss ideas on this show, I try to do it from a space where I'm not so hot-headed. And I kind of do. I kind of lose my cool a little bit. And I don't know. Yeah, you're going to hear it. But I'm not apologizing for what I'm saying. I agree with the takes that I'm offering in this episode. I'm more or less just sort of prepping you and letting you know that that's what's coming. And that's it. I think that's all I want to say about it. Okay? Yeah. Also, just a fun little side note. I don't know if you're noticing this at all, but I bought a new microphone. I was in Utah when I recorded this episode. I recorded the episode on my old microphone, but Chrissy Bear over at Marmalade Music, who mixes and masters the show, you know Chris, he's been wanting me to get a new microphone for the longest time, and I finally did it because I got that McDonald's money now. You know how I'm rolling in it. And we got a new microphone, and listen to this bad boy. Listen to this baby purr. I mean, maybe your ears don't really notice the difference, but I sure do, and I know Chris's do. I know he's happy. I'm happy about it. Maybe you audio aficionados out there are like, ooh, this does sound better. It does, just so you know. Some people can't tell the difference, but trust that you just have to trust me that this is better, okay? All right, that's all I wanted to say at the top of the show. Here we go. Here's the show. Okay. From a Blankenfoot recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, you know what it is? This is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer. I'm not actually in North Hollywood. I'm in my brother's kitchen in Murray, Utah. He's out of town. He's in Hawaii with his wife. It's been raining the whole time they've been there, and I've been staying at their house because I'm in Utah working. I was making a music video this week. With a production company I started with a friend out here in Utah, my buddy Kramer, who's helped me out on my music videos in the past. We started a production company and we've been out here making a music video. We had a 15-hour shoot yesterday. It was a long day. 15 hours. I'm not complaining about having a really cool job. I'm really happy that I have a really cool job and that I get to do what I love, but it was long. I was tired at the end of it, as you can imagine, and throughout. I think I was tired by like hour 7, but we rocked it. We knocked it out. Yeah. Okay. Here we are. You saw the thumbnail. It's a mini-sode. That's what we're doing. I just wanted to talk about a couple things because first of all, this is the first thing I want to talk about. It's been a year. You know, I've been thinking for several months that when we got to this point, I would do a mini-sode about this, and I would, because I, you know, it's like when I talk with guests, usually there's a couple week delay before we actually drop the episode. I like to have a little backlog of episodes ready to go, so we don't usually stick to like extremely urgent current topics. Usually, when it's a current topic, it's a mini-sode. But I figured I would want to do a talk about the fact that it's been a year. Wild. Where were you a year ago when this was first going down? Do you remember? I'm sure you do. I listened to this episode on my drive to Utah from Los Angeles from Malcolm Gladwell's podcast about memory. Malcolm Gladwell's podcast isn't just about memory. His podcast is called Revisionist History, so it sort of is about memory. But this episode specifically was about memory. It's an episode called Free Brian Williams, and it talks about the way that people, their stories of how things went down sort of change over time unconsciously. They don't do it on purpose, but unconsciously we change details every time we tell a story. I've told the story of where I was when I first heard that everything was shutting down several times over the last year. I'm fairly certain I have the details correct, but I also, like, I definitely might have mashed up different days from those first few weeks into like one day, you know? And I'm not aware that I did that on purpose, but like that might have happened. So here's the way that I tell the story. I'm not sure that this is actually how it goes down. I'll have to double check with my friend Jess because he's the friend that I was with. But this is the way that I tell my story about where I was a year ago when everything started shutting down. My friend Jess and I, Jess Kellner, you can find him on TikTok at The Jess Kellner Show. He's really funny. We were in Santa Monica going to see a movie. We were going to see 1917. You remember movies? Remember movie theaters? And going to see movies in them and getting popcorn and a big drink. And yeah, wasn't that fun? We're in Santa Monica and we went to eat at a restaurant that I was working at the time called True Food Kitchen. They had a location in Santa Monica. My location was in Pasadena. We went to eat and we went on a walk down the beach. We just spent the day together. We were just like having like a fun buds hang. Went on a walk down the beach, just like chit-chatting. And then we went to go see this movie. And we're sitting outside the movie theater waiting for our movie to start. And we're looking at our phones, as you do when you're waiting for the next thing to do. And I believe Jess looks up from his phone at me and he says, "Hey, did you hear this? Tom Hanks has COVID." And I was like, "Oh my God, Tom Hanks, man." I was like, "Dude, everyone, like so many celebrities are getting it." Now this is, so it's before everything was shutting down, but we were hearing more and more about different cases. And then, these high profile cases were starting to happen. And, Tom Hanks. And so I'm like, "Oh, wow." And then I'm sitting there, I'm looking through my phone and I'm a big sports head. And I knew that the Jazz were playing the Oklahoma City Thunder that night. And so I'm like checking to see what the score is. And I see, oh, the Jazz, the center for the Utah Jazz, Rudy Gobert, has COVID. I tell my friend that. I go, "Oh, Rudy Gobert has COVID." And he goes, "Oh, yeah." And I'm like, "Yeah, their game is canceled." I was like, "Dude, like NBA games never get canceled for anything." It's like they sent people home from the arena. We're like both scrolling through our phones. And then as I'm scrolling and reading about this NBA game being canceled, like 5 minutes go by before I get this alert on like my ESPN sports app. And it's like the NBA season is suspended indefinitely. And that's when, for me, the world kind of went poof, and everything sort of stopped spinning. Like the world stopped moving for a second, and it really came into focus. And I looked up and I looked at my friend. I went, "The NBA season is suspended indefinitely." And he was like, "Whoa!" And he's not really a sports fan. I was like, "I don't think you understand. Like that does not happen." And so we're both kind of looking through our phones and we're not saying much. We're just sort of trying to keep up on what's happening in the news. It's sort of like if there's, they call it in the Malcolm Gladwell episode, they call it a flashbulb event. You know, the exploding of the Challenger, the landing on the moon, JFK assassination, 9/11. This felt like a flashbulb event. We couldn't really look away from the news for a bit. We were scrolling, trying to find every piece of information we could find. And finally, Jess looks up at me and he goes, "Should we be outside right now?" And I was like, "I don't know." It's like, "I don't think so. Like, maybe not." We didn't stop doing what we were doing. We still went to go see the movie. I'll even say this. Mary and I, we went home from the movie, and I think it was like on a Wednesday or something. And they announced that they were going to close Universal Studios, which is down the street from where we live, and Mary and I have season passes, and they said they were going to close it by Friday. And so we were like, should we go tomorrow since they're going to close? It's like we didn't fully understand like what this meant, what things closing down meant. Everyone still sort of felt like it's going to be maybe a week, maybe a few days, just to sort of feel it out, see what reevaluate. So we went to Universal Studios. This is something that, like, in saying now in retrospect, it's like, I can't believe we did that. But we didn't know. And then it started becoming clear that everything that we needed was going to start closing down. And that you know, the plan was, I don't know if you guys remember this, but this is the way I'm remembering it. And again, I might be telling this wrong. Like, I might be misremembering this only a year later. But I feel like the immediate plan was, we're all going to, like, go inside for 2 to 3 weeks. And we're not going to come out. And we're going to, you got to go to the store and load up and make sure that you got toilet paper. That was like the thing that everyone was certain they were going to poop enough to go through, like, 6 24 packs of toilet paper in 3 weeks. You got to have toilet paper and enough food for 2 to 3 weeks and go home and don't leave. And I mean, that's pretty scary. But also, I remember in those first couple weeks, it being kind of a novelty and kind of fun, in a weird way, in a really dark way. I remember we went to the store to get our supplies, and we didn't have masks yet, so we wrapped scarves around our faces. And there were a lot of people with sort of makeshift masks in the store, some people just not wearing masks. But yeah, the scene in there, you remember the energy in those stores a year ago? Like, it really felt like end times energy, you know? Walking down aisles where shelves were empty, just shelves had just been stripped, and all that was left was, like, really off-brand, like, weird, obscure items. And you felt like you were walking through a grocery store in a post-apocalyptic world. The produce section was cleared out. Just things that you never see. Images that you're just not used to, but also people running around in a state of kind of suppressed panic, like quiet panic. And you can't help but pick up on it. You're trying to keep your cool. A specific memory that pops out to me is my restaurant when we were closing down. Again, like, things that don't happen. Like, restaurants don't close. We're open 7 days a week, 365 days a year, you know. Well, I think the restaurant that I worked at closed on Christmas, so 364 days. But yeah, restaurants don't close. So we closed the restaurant, I think, for a couple weeks before they reopened for takeout. But they needed to get rid of all of their food. So they told all the employees, you can come by with grocery bags and we'll give you all of the food that we have. You can just take as much as you want. It was really cool of them. And I remember coming by to get the food, and the mood from, like, my managers and the chefs, it was like, there were, like, people crying. There were, like, people who were, like, really emotional. Like, the head chef was, like really scared and, like, sad. And I told him, I said, thank you for doing this. Thank you for being here, and thanks for doing this. And he, like, looked at me, and he, like, couldn't answer. He was, like, kind of choked up, and he was like, yeah, yeah, you know, we're just trying to help. Those aren't the kinds of reactions I ever have with my coworkers. Like, we say, like, a couple words to each other at the beginning, and, like, at the beginning of the shift, like, oh, what's up? And then, like, throughout, we're just sort of barking at each other as we're working. But to, like, walk in there and have it be so somber and have it be so scary, just no one knew what was coming. So there was that. There was the fear when you would leave your home. But then there was this energy that I remember from the first couple weeks, because we only thought it was going to be a couple weeks, where it was, like, kind of fun. Like, Mary and I had this, like, 2 to 3 week vacation, this staycation where we were just going to be in the apartment and we were just going to, like, watch TV shows and find out, do jigsaw puzzles. Remember the jigsaw puzzles? And everyone was doing jigsaw puzzles and showing their jigsaw puzzles and cooking different things. And you tried to sort of make it fun. Like if it was a snow day or something, you know, like if you, you were in a town where they had to close all the roads because of a blizzard and people had to stay home from work that day. And it's like, well, this is kind of scary, but it's also kind of fun that we're like cooped up in the house and no one's leaving. So there's no FOMO. There's no like parties that we're missing out on. You know, there's nothing that like we're supposed to be doing that we're not doing. And yeah, someone just said in the chat, I remember the fun, we made quarantinis. I remember seeing that a lot, that people were like, I'm making quarantinis. And that it was sort of this novel thing, because you have to try to make the most of it. You can't just be sitting in your house shaking and terrified for 2 to 3 weeks. But yeah, the fact that we thought that that's what it would be is 2 to 3 weeks. And then as it turned into a month and it turned into 6 weeks and it turned into 8 weeks. I remember around like the 8 week mark, like the 2 to 3 month mark, that I started feeling like, oh, I don't think that this is stopping anytime soon. And I think like 2 months in, 2 or 3 months in, I asked my friend's partner, who's a doctor, I asked her, I said, hey, what do you think is like a reasonable out time for us to be done with this? And she said, it's a pandemic, which is 18 to 24 months. And that was the first time I'd heard that. She said it as though it was like common knowledge, but I remember the messaging on TV and from the CDC and stuff being like, we're just going to need to flatten that curve, you know, couple weeks inside, you know, watching video. I remember before the US shut down, Italy was shut down. And I remember like watching the people sing to each other from the balconies and stuff and thinking, oh my God, that's so crazy. And then it happened to us and we thought, okay, we're going to have to stay inside for a few weeks. Everyone was doing live shows, lots of like live concerts and live plays and things. But I remember hearing it just be that it was going to be a few weeks. And when she said that to me, so matter of fact, 18 to 24 months, I was like, what do you mean 18 to 24 months? And she's like, that's what a pandemic is. That's kind of how they're like defined, is they usually take about 18 to 24 months. And I was like, well, I mean, but are we going to be like back to normal, but it's just going to still be sort of happening? And she was like, I mean, we'll see. She's like, most likely we're not going to be like out of the quarantine phase for like a long time. And I couldn't believe it. It's so much easier to believe now. I mean, we've been doing this for 12 months. We're old pros at this. It's an old hat topic at this point. But boy, it is wild to remember those first few months of realizing that there's no chance that we're ever going back to any kind of what it was like before. We are going to be irrevocably changed for a while from this. It's now well and truly a flashbulb event that will reshape the way we do things moving forward. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just crazy. It's crazy to be here. I want to go to the comments now. That's all I wanted to say. I wanted to talk a little bit about what it was like in those early days. I guess I could talk a little bit about what it's like now, but I feel like we know what it's like now. Like, we're still just making our way through it, and we're now more aware that this is now just what it is. But it's a different world now. It's an entirely different world. When I had my birthday in January, we had a few friends get together in a park for a socially distanced pizza hang, and I like said to Mary, I was like, she was like, do you want to get together with friends? I was like, yes, I haven't gotten together with friends in forever. And she was like, well, we had dinner for your birthday last year. And I was like, oh my God, last year on my birthday, January 24th, 2020, we did have dinner at a big restaurant and it was packed and we had a table of like 10 friends and we shared tapas. And I was like, yeah, that was a different world that we were in. That's not the world we live in anymore. Let's go to the comments now. No one's been using the Q&A section. Awesome. But we're live on TikTok. If you don't know, we go live on TikTok every Sunday to do the podcast. Usually we just do the intro and outro, but we're doing the full show here. Hey, TikTok! How are you? Rachel Rachel Apunte, sometimes these people's names, I like the way that it's spelled. It feels like it could be three different words, or I don't know where the first word ends and the second word begins. You know what I mean? No offense to your name. I'm sure it's a totally normal name. I'm going to say it's Rachel Apunte. Positive it's not that, but that's what I'm going to say. It says, will you be playing that beautiful piano, and can I? Obviously, you can't. You'd have to be here. And no, I won't, is the answer to those questions. T Nastiest says, wait, we're on a podcast? Yeah, you are, buddy. Welcome to my podcast, T Nastiest. We do the podcast live every week on TikTok. That's what we've been doing. That's why I'm talking into this giant thing. Is because we're on my podcast, People Pleaser, with Austin Archer. Welcome. Miss Brandy Don says, my concept of time is forever changed, with a laughing emoji. Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. Like do you remember thinking, boy, this is actually kind of a blessing in disguise, because now I have a lot of free time to get, like, projects done. And you thought you were going to do a bunch of projects and learn how to do a bunch of things and maybe, like, learn a new language or learn how to play a new instrument or, like, finally write that book or that script. And here we are 12 months later and, like, did you? It's okay if you didn't. It's really okay. It really, really is. T Nastia says, how many times do you say chugga before finally cashing in that big loud choo-choo? Let me count. This is what I would normally say. I'm going to just say it like how I would say it. Chugga, 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 choo-choo. So let me count that. Chugga, 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 12 times. But I say them fast. So it's kind of three rounds of four. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Chew, chew. That feels right to me. Asked by Crook KJ80. What are you most looking forward to doing again? Oh, geez. So many things. But honestly, and I think this is a lot of people's, and it sounds so silly, but like, really? The movies, I can't with these streaming premieres, you guys. It's been one of the most, in a year that's been profound, there's been so many things to be depressed by and upset by. A movie that I'm really looking forward to premiering on streaming and then finally like swallowing my pride and watching it on streaming has been consistently disappointing. I'm always like watching movies on streaming and being like, I can tell that this scene was supposed to be so cool in the theater, and I'm just trying to enjoy it more here on my smaller home screen and with my worse home sound. You know, it's just like, it sucks. Like watching the movie Soul, when Disney premiered Soul, I was like, this is a really beautifully animated movie. That like that shot of him on that escalator to the great beyond, and it's like stretching on into a void, and there's sort of like that white smatter that's like stretching out into oblivion. I'm like, that's supposed to be consumed in a dark theater with a giant screen where the black on the frame extends into the black of the room, and you feel like you're in that void, and you can't do that at home. You just can't get it. And I felt bad for the filmmakers. I felt bad for the animators who animated that like, well, the whole idea behind this shot is now we lost the reason for it. So I really, 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 really want to go back to the movie theater. I've heard people say that they think that like, this is going to be the end of movie theaters because people are going to realize that they don't need them. And I'm like, I think that movie theaters are going to do really well because people realize how much they miss them. So that there's that, going to the movies. And then I should say, because I'm a theater person, going to the theater and performing live on stage in front of people. Really, really, really miss that. And I'm so sad. I remember when things were first shutting down, I had a lot of luckily I did not, but I had a lot of friends who had just booked work at like a really good theater or who had like just booked a Broadway show and their show was just about to open on Broadway and they had to stop. And imagine that coitus interruptus, where you're like about to actualize your dreams or like about to go do the thing at a really good theater and get paid and do your favorite thing. And instead you go into a year of not doing it when you're used to doing it like every few months, you know, if you're lucky. Yeah, I thought that was really hard. And I've been watching my friends who are live performers really struggle through like, what do I do now? And kind of questioning like all of their life choices and stuff. And it'll just be really interesting to see what it looks like when we come back. Let me see what else I missed here. We got some questions I missed. Florida Flamingal says, I worry about my toddler. Like, what essential life stuff is this 3-year-old missing? Yeah, I pretty much worry a lot about anyone under 20. Or really, like, under 20, anyone that's still in school or anyone that's, like, still in a developing age where they're, like, becoming the person that they're going to be for the rest of their life. Like, there are these seminal life experiences that you get to have, and theirs will be unique, you know? They will be a class of people who went through high school or college or, you know, a section of middle school or elementary school during this profoundly different time. And they will have a very unique story, and their story will be colored by the uniqueness of it. But I feel very bad. If I personally, and I have friends who are college teachers, college professors, who have told me about like how hard this is and how difficult it's been to teach online and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I absolutely feel that. And I feel so bad about how difficult this must be for you, because they say that, like, especially my college friends that are like theater teachers, they're like, my students don't want to be here. And I'm like, I'm gonna tell you honestly, I don't blame them. I would feel so cheated if I was a theater student who, like, the whole idea of doing theater in college is doing shows, is like putting up the shows, getting to act, getting to design the clothes, getting to design the set, getting to direct, getting to choreograph, getting to do the thing. And if I was paying money to go to school for theater and I was getting my acting classes over Zoom, absolutely not. Give me my money back. I'll see you in a couple years. Like, I can't believe that they haven't just gone, we're going to stop. Or just say, tuition is now a quarter of the cost it used to be because that's what you're getting for the money. Like, it's insane that tuition is still what it is. So, yeah, I absolutely worry about, I mean, I don't have a toddler, so I don't know what life experience. I imagine, I think about young kids in the same way that I think about, like, pets. Like, not, I'm going to explain this, like dogs and cats, and not because I think of them as animals. Let me explain. In the way that when they look at adult humans and their behavior, they're, like, trying to figure it out. Like, what is going on? And when you're 2 or 3 years old and you're used to everyone in the world not wearing a mask, and then suddenly for a year straight, everywhere you go, people suddenly have this new thing over their face. And this is what I mean by dogs and cats, is like, what do our dogs and cats think is going on? Like, when they look at us, and I know that, like, dogs see with their nose. Whatever. They have eyes and cats have eyes. What do they think is happening now? And are they, like, thinking, like, why are you not giving me one of those? Like, you all are wearing them. Is there something you're not telling me? Like, should I have that on? Like, I wonder what a toddler thinks about what's happening. If you've got a kid that's 4 or 5 or 6, like, I guess you could try to explain it to them. Fiona says, my 3-year-old speech delay is worse because of the pandemic. I imagine that that is true. I imagine that that would be a problem. Any kind of, developing age where you're, like, supposed to be having, like, formative experiences, that interruption is like, what does that do? And I think only time will tell us what it actually does. Trey Bay says, my kids have been depressed and it breaks my heart. That breaks my heart as well. I really, like, what is the solution? Like, how do we, you can't tell them, like, don't worry, you'll get to go to prom next year. If it's their senior year and they graduated last year, you can't say anything to me. All you can say is, like, sorry, honey, sometimes the world sucks. And I guess that's a lesson to learn. I mean, geez, I just, how hard. Ordinary Boy, Ordinary Name says, I don't get the lack of masks / pandemic in TV shows. Yeah, it is kind of weird. Like, in commercials, you see masks a lot, in a lot of commercials, but, like, it's still, like, yeah, it's weird. It's weird that, like, TV shows that are supposed to take place in the present, they continued production, and they found, I mean, I've been on SAG sets, and, like, it's really safe. Like, it's, like, they, people are getting tested, you know, several times a week while they're working. And everyone wears masks on set. You literally cannot stand closer to each other than 6 feet unless you're on set acting. It's, you know, they do everything that they possibly can to make it a safe work environment. But it's weird that, like, if your show takes place in the current time, then it should take place in the current time. Or are they trying to say it's an alternate reality where these people and these characters exist, and in their alternate reality, we didn't have, you know, industrial practices which led us to push into environments that we weren't supposed to be in and bring animals out of environments that they weren't supposed to be brought out of, and therefore mixing our DNA with theirs and getting pathogens and whatever. Well, not DNA, but just receiving pathogens from and bacteria from animals that we're not really supposed to have that much contact with. In their universe, they have better environmental practices with industry and food and stuff, and they didn't have a global pandemic. I guess maybe that's what that is. Heather Menard says, follower demo? I'm guessing really broad span. I have no idea what my follower demo is. I know that I'm like 74% female, which, hey, my ladies, it's Women's Month. What up? I love my ladies. I think that I skew toward, like, you know, like 30 years old and older women. I have a lot of, like, seemingly a lot of women with kids in my demo. So, yeah, I'm not sure exactly. Yeah, Millennial Jen says, do you watch movies and think, where are their masks? I don't. I've heard people say that. So someone asked, this is similar to the question that someone asked before, like, why aren't they in TV and movies and stuff? I when I'm watching a movie that takes place before 2020, or that takes place in a different, if I'm like watching a Marvel movie or something, like watching WandaVision, I don't think, where are their masks? Because that's the Marvel universe. And it's just, I mean, like, it's like Iron Man exists in that universe. Witches exist in that universe. Thanos exists in that universe. I don't think that they're dealing with COVID in that universe. But that's just me. Crook KJ80 says, I worked in theater backstage. We stopped tech for a show on March 12th, 2020. I miss it so much. Yeah, a lot of places did, and they thought they'd be back up by the summer. You remember that? Everyone was like, we'll see you in a couple months. Like, we are going to do this show. We're going to do it in May. People were like, we're gonna be back up in May, and then it was June, and then it was, we'll see you in the fall. We're going to do a fall season, a short season. We'll be back up by September for sure, and now it's, we'll see you when we see you. And if you're a non-professional house, if you're a community theater in certain parts of the world, you just kept on going. You just said, we don't give a shit, and you just kept right on going. There's plenty of places like that in Utah where I'm at right now, and they suck. But those are my thoughts on that. Yeah, it really sucks if you were working on a show or doing something that you love and it was stopped and you haven't been able to go back to work yet. Really sucks. 'Cause believe it or not, just staying at home collecting unemployment isn't very fun and isn't very fulfilling. And it's not a really fulfilling way to spend a year of your life. And that's sort of a great, I mean, we've really seen a great argument for universal basic income and for just improving policies where we're taking better care of each other and like universal healthcare and stuff like that. People always think that the reason why people go to work is because they need that money to survive and to pay bills and stuff. No, people, I mean, we do because of capitalism, and we do have to do that because capitalism has forced us to, and we have to go to jobs we don't like because of capitalism. But people want to work, and we saw that in 2020. We saw that paying people decent amounts with unemployment to stay home, still, it didn't fix the fact that like people were like, yeah, but I like my job. Like, I want to do what I do. I want to feel like I have purpose. People work because they want to feel like they're doing something with the gift of consciousness and with being alive. You know, people as a general rule don't just want to sit around and do nothing for the entirety of their life. Some people do, but I think those people are a minority of people. And it's a small enough amount of people that we can just go, cool, we'll take care of those people and let them do whatever they want to do. And we'll give them 15 to 20 grand a year in universal basic income. And if they just want to sit and do nothing, they can. I don't think that most of us would do that. I think that we would go, cool, this means that like my base needs are always like more or less covered, and that I can really try to make more money doing something that I feel like I'm really good at and something that I feel like I can really contribute with. Culinary Code says, literally everyone doing creative stuff got a huge punch in the mouth over this. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. There were definitely industries that were hit harder than others. And that's a blessing and a curse, you know? Because you talk to people who are like working, say, in like a grocery store or something, they're like, I don't feel like I'm lucky that I never left work, that I had to work the entire time. You know, like, I don't know. Some people feel that way. Some people are like, I feel really lucky that I was able to stay at work and stay employed. But I think I've talked to people that are like, I don't know, like, you got to take what? I took 8 months off of work. I mean, I was doing content creation the entire time, but I wasn't getting paid. I was just collecting unemployment. 8 months of me just making music and making videos and making podcasts. Yeah, I don't know. And not getting paid for any of it. Morgan Ale Bay says, what are your thoughts on the recent relief bill? I think it's really good. I think overall, as an optimist, what I want to say is that I'm happy that something got passed, and it's better than what we had. But that's where I'll leave the compliments, and I'll say, fuck moderate Democrats, and fuck Republicans all the way. Fuck anyone who says that they're all the same. They're not. There are people who are actually trying to do something, and there are people who are actively stopping good things from happening. Fuck those people. That's my thought on that bill. People who want to make concessions for literally no reason. They're like, you know, it's a $9.2 trillion bill. We can make it $9.188 trillion if we cut this, this, and this. Or whatever. No, what? Sorry, not nine. $1.88 trillion. But it's like, at that point, it's such a stupid amount of money. Who cares? We're talking about people's lives here, and you're talking about decimal points of made up numbers of money. What we're learning through this pandemic is that money doesn't exist, and that its value is given to it by federal organizations from different countries and how they trade against each other. And people get to decide on how that works. You know, when we talk about giving people more money, it's like, well, that's going to cause inflation. That only causes inflation because under capitalism, the only way to pay for giving people money is to raise prices. We never, ever think it's an option to just take more money away from people at the top, or take away money from defense spending, or take away or tax churches, or there's so many other ways to pay for stuff. And all we can ever think of is, I guess we have to raise prices on things. I guess mortgage rates have to skyrocket. I guess that's the only way we can cover this. No, of course that's not the only way we can cover this. And there are lots of people who know this stuff, who are smart enough and compassionate enough to want to be engaged in an actual solution that is sustainable, that can push us toward a sustainable future with this stuff. But there are people who, for whatever reason, mostly greed and, you know, private interests and sometimes just good old-fashioned garden variety stupidity, are trying to stop that from happening. So that's my take on that. Fionula says, I don't know if Foy Hunula, that you gotta fix that name. Foy H Nula. Is that how you spell your name? If that's how you spell your name, then I apologize. I really do apologize, because you say you're from the UK, so maybe it's like a Gaelic spelling or something, or like some Fornula. Okay, is it like Gaelic? It's my real name, she says. Okay, it's actually a really cool name. I like Fornula. I just look at that spelling and I'm like, what in the world? Is it? Because I've seen like my friend had a dog named Samhain and it was spelled Samhain. Is it like that? Like an Irish? Yeah, it's Irish. Got it. Cool. Thought so. Fornula. I like that name. Really cool. Says, same issue in the UK, and they keep hiking taxes on the poor, not the rich. Exactly. Every time you want a social program that's designed to help people in the lower and middle classes and designed to give more access to social programs that are really costly, the only way they can think of paying for it is by charging those people for it. That's stupid. That doesn't make sense. The wealth gap in developed countries keeps getting wider and wider, and the people at the top keep getting more and more wealthy. The obvious solution, if you want to find the money to help the people at the bottom, is to take more away from the people at the top, not to charge the people at the bottom if they want. That doesn't make any sense. It's a canceling philosophy. It's like, well, if you want us to be able to afford the money we want to give you, you need to pay for it. That doesn't make any sense. That's stupid. Moderate Democrats are stupid. Republicans are stupid. You know how many Republicans I talk to who don't believe in like Republican values as far as being like homophobic or sexist or racist, but they say that they're like economically conservative? I'm like, then you haven't thought enough about how you actually think about economics. That's stupid. Boy, sorry, I got riled up. I didn't meditate today. Can you tell? I've been a little bit like hot all day long. This is what happens when I don't meditate. So I'm a little bit hot. And I was early on talking about the pandemic, I was like kind of keeping it like low vibes. Then we talked about that bill and I wanted to be positive about it, but I get really mad that like we make it so hard to do good things for each other. Morgan says, a little manic, but it's okay. Yeah, that's fair. Got a little heated there. A little heated. Let's bring it back. Let's bring it back. Jenna Rossin says, there shouldn't be billionaires, period. If you're worth 999,999,999,999, you won. Enough, man. Totally. It's got to be enough money. It has to be enough money. When I hear ideas put forward where they're like, seriously, we should have a wealth cap, that like there's only so much money you can make, and at that point, you're done. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't like, and people are like, no, but then there wouldn't be an incentive. You need to incentivize people to want to be, you know, ingenuitive and to want to create new industries and stuff. It's like, you're telling me that $999 million isn't enough of an incentive to do that? You need to have the incentive of potentially being worth hundreds of billions of dollars? Bullshit. Yeah, Low Pearl says, socially liberal, fiscally conservative. Yeah, you hear that all the time, and it's like, yeah, fiscally conservative. It's like, I think that you think that somehow Republicans or conservatives are like smarter with money because they don't spend it as much. You're wrong. Fiscal conservatives believe in
helping the hierarchical structure that is in place and keeping people where they are. And the whole idea of this all started with trickle-down economics with Reagan, and it was supposed to be this idea that if you allow people to grow at exponential rates and don't do anything to hinder their monetary growth, they will create all of these jobs and all of this wealth for the entire country. We've been going through 40 years of it, and we've seen very clearly it was a lie. It does not work. People who still think that that's the way things work, despite a mountain of evidence, 40 years of evidence that it doesn't work, are clowns, and you're being taken for a ride. Yeah. Boy, I need to get off this kick. Duffy says Bezos would owe $5 billion under the wealth tax. Half a day's pay for him. Taxes for the year. Yeah, I mean, people are like, wow, $5 billion. It's like, take half of it. Take half of his wealth every year, because he's going to keep making money. It's not like if we take half of his wealth this year, that he's going to only be left with half of it for the rest of his life. Not that that would be a problem. He'd still be totally okay. Take half of it. Take more than half. Take 70%. Take 90%. He's still one of the wealthiest people in the world, one of the wealthiest people to ever exist. It's ridiculous. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke that they twiddle their thumbs and wring their hands over how are we going to pay for this. I don't know. I feel like we've gotten a little bit away from the pandemic or from talking about that we've been doing a year of COVID, but also like this is the conversation, right? This year has very much so been about class and about wealth disparity and about really highlighting like where the gaps are in the problems in society. Formula, I got the name right now, I got it down. Asks, what's your go-to pandemic escapism / distraction? You're looking at it. This is it. Making content and being creative, doing lives, making videos, making music. That's always been my life. That's always been the thing that I've done. But like, it has never become more a part of my identity and who I am than it is now. This is my favorite thing to do. I do it every single day, and this is it. It helps me feel like I'm participating somehow in some kind of meaningful way, even if I'm just kidding myself. Yeah. What's yours? What do you like to do? Katie Katya says, I've always said, does Bezos work 50 billion times harder than his lowest paid employee? Well, the answer to that question is, of course he does not. That's impossible. And of course he's not worth 50. He's not inherently, intrinsically worth his ideas and his brain and his intellect and his vision is not worth 50 billion times his lowest paid employees. It's just not. And if you think it is, you're a sucker. You've been brought in by an ideology that is designed to keep you where you are. Trisha Capoletti says, I might be high, but that mic looks dumb big. Welcome to the podcast, Trisha. Welcome to People Pleaser. This is what we do here. I talk into a giant microphone, and you're on the show. Asked by Ordinary Boy, Ordinary Name, best side effects of the pandemic? Probably just a little bit like highlighting like where the cracks really are. It's things that people have lots of people have known for many years. But this really helps bring it into focus, you know, and make it really clear. Now that might be a bad thing because maybe it spurns like some kind of class war that brings the country down and then we really live in a post-apocalyptic society, but hopefully it can just get us doing more common sense things and continue to elect people and representatives that we believe will fight for common sense legislation and policies, and we don't turn back, and we don't keep doing the flip-flop thing that we tend to do in this country, where we're like, well, we tried 8 years of that party, let's try the other party. It's like, no, the other party is broken. They suck. They're the worst. They're the worst people. They ran and elected Donald Trump. They're the worst people. They can't be trusted anymore. They're completely unmoored from reality, and they're liars, and they only know how to lie, and they don't care about solving the very real problems that are apparent to us. God, I am in a bad funk today. I don't think I was ready for where this topic was going to take me, but I think that this is also part of what this year has done to our collective psyche. Is like never before have we been put in such a vice grip and such an emotionally difficult place. We've all been having to just like cope, you know, and we always have to cope. It's not like it's just rainbows and raspberries and sunshine and then COVID happened, but COVID, it's just, it's hard, man. Best side effects of the pandemic. Okay, let me think about positives here. Let me switch this over. Let's flip the script here. Okay, here's something. This is good. And I've been talking to people about this lately. There's a thing happening. And this is the last thing I'm going to say because the show is getting long. And I've got to go. I've got to go to dinner with my brother. But I want to end it on a positive note. And this isn't a thing that affects everyone in the world, I know, and I wish it could be something that's like, this is good for all of us. But I think overall it is actually good for all of us, and I'm going to explain this thing that I think is happening. And I think it's happening as a side effect of the shutdown and of the pandemic. In my field, in artistic and creative fields, music, acting, writing, directing, there has long been this sort of dynamic, this disparity where you either make it and are doing really well and are making like almost too much money, or you struggle. And those are kind of the majority of where people are at in these industries, is like you've either found a way to be like really successful monetarily with it, or you're just struggling. And you've always got two or three survival jobs, and it's just gig economy, and you struggle to figure out where you're going to get your healthcare from and how you're going to pay your union dues and this, that, and the other thing. There hasn't really been traditionally and historically a thriving middle class in the arts. New media has been a thing since 2005 or thereabouts, with the advent of YouTube, and shortly thereafter you get things like, you know, Instagram starts going into videos, Vine, Twitter, and more people start figuring out a way to sort of have their own little business, their own little side hustle as an artist, as a creative person, where they're not technically a person who has made it and who is making millions of dollars a year. They're not necessarily a person who's known the world round, but they've been able to make a decent living, a decent middle class living. And that was still a small amount of people that were able to do that up until 2020. 2020, to me, seems to be this sort of watershed moment for new media, where because the theater industry was just decimated and just disappeared, live music just disappeared, all these creative types who were used to having job opportunities in live performance had to figure out what they were going to do. They turned to new media and content creation. And what we saw as a result of that is brands and companies are starting to want to work with mid-level creators more and more and more than it used to just be. Like, in order to have a brand want to work with you, you had to have like at least 1 million followers. So again, you had to be one of the people who was up in the top echelon. You had to have made it. But brands more and more are seeing this because of platforms like TikTok. they're seeing this sort of like boom in mid-level creators, people who have a sizable following, a respectable following, but a following that's still like middle class. And they want to work with those people, and they want to give those people entire campaigns to run and stuff like that. And we're seeing more and more of this, and I think it's going to potentially create the opportunity for there to be a middle class for artists. And that's not really something that's ever existed before. So I know that's not a thing that affects everyone. I know that that's really just something that's like good for me and people like me. But what I do think that that is it's indicative of like a potential future we can have where we actually have a thriving middle class again. And America does not have a thriving middle class right now. We, you know, and overall it's like, it would be cool to see us be able to fatten up the middle class and bolster up that arena and give more people a more just standardized, comfortable level of living. You know, fiscal conservatives would call it communism or socialism. And then they would also say that like their policies exist to benefit the working class and to bolster up the middle class. But like, that's not at all what their policies exist for. But that is the side effect that I will say that I've been noticing lately that I'm excited about. Who knows how it'll play out. This might just be something that I'm seeing in my personal life, and I'm extrapolating it out and projecting it onto to everyone else. But who knows? Stay on the live. I'm going to talk to you guys for a little bit longer. I'm just going to wrap up the podcast here. Thank you so much for all of your questions on this topic. Sorry I got a little heated, but you know, I think that makes for at least an entertaining listen and watch, doesn't it? Who knows? We'll see. If I lose all my followers or listeners to the podcast in a week, then we'll know. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music. Also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com. You can buy my records at austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Links in my bio, on all my social media platforms. My music and my podcast are mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Hit up Chris for your audio project. Tell him that I sent you. He'll give you 20% off. Go to themarmalademusic.com. Say, hey, Chris, I heard your work on Austin's podcast or on Austin's latest album, and I think you do really good work, and I want you to do my thing, and he'll give you 20% off your first project. And that's it. That's the show. Thanks for hanging out on TikTok, and thanks for the feedback. I hope that wasn't too much of a bummer. What are your favorite things out there? What are your favorite side effects of the pandemic? What are your favorite ways to cope with what's going on in the world right now? What are your biggest fears? Let's hear from you. Give me some feedback. Hit me up. Pop in on the live show next Sunday, and you can keep asking me questions about this. I don't mind. Cool. Be nice to each other out there. Wear your masks. Take care, okay? Love you.